Chapter 22. Theologica. Gilliman walked under a carved stone motif proclaiming the divinity of his creator and into a space constructed entirely around that belief. The cathedral enclosed a huge volume to fit the enormousness of the faith the people had in the emperor. The stonework was encrusted with decoration and statuary. It was almost frenzied in its devotion, a plea in stone to be noticed and saved. But like the truth it purported to encompass, the space within the walls was empty.
If only they knew, thought Gilliman.
He looked upwards through the roof towards the clearing sky. Beams dangled from rotting ligaments of iron. The floor was slippery with mulchy timber and fallen tiles. The statues were broken, the windows smashed, and anything that bore witness to the emperor's divinity had been damaged. These were the least of the harms done to the building. The desecration of the cathedral was more fundamental than the mere destruction of art, for the warping effects of chaos had been forced deeply into its fabric. An unwholesome fetor filled the cathedral wall to wall. It had similarities to the scent of decay found in the lower reaches of a forest, a loamy, deep smell, though this had little of renewal to it. The promise of new life it offered up was a lie. The entourage of Adeptus Custodes, Sisters of Silence, and the Victrix Guard fanned out, weapons ready. The librarians remained at his side. Hard sounds clattered through the ruin. There were two major transepts at either end of the long nave. A third minor transept crossed the middle of the church. Like many holy buildings, the cathedral's plan, when viewed from above, made the single-barred eye of the Imperium. Gilliman surveyed it all disapprovingly. Worship of his creator had become the bedrock of the Imperium. It was as pernicious as the effects of chaos in its way. He did not understand it, but as he looked around this cathedral, one like many hundreds he had seen all across the Imperium, he doubted his own convictions regarding the Emperor's divinity.
Theoretical, he thought. The Emperor is a god and denied his own divinity to protect humanity. Practical, he is a god. Or, he continued to himself, theoretical, the Emperor was not a god, but became one. Practical, he is a god.
He dismissed the idea angrily. These theoreticals had trooped through his thoughts so many times before. He had grown weary of them, but his mind would not stop generating counter-arguments to his beliefs.
Theoretical. The Emperor was always a god, but was unaware of it. Practical. He is a god. No, he thought. Theoretical. The Emperor became a god to protect humanity. Practical. He is a god. He is not a god, he thought.
Theoretical. Gilliman thought savagely now, turning his anger against his traitorous mind.
The Emperor was never a god, denied he was a god, and has been wrongly elevated by men who see power and mistake it for divinity. Practical. The Emperor is not a god.
He is not a god,
said Gilliman out loud.
He could not countenance the thought. A being that cold and callous was not worthy of worship.
Why then did the question dog him so?
My lord, asked Maxim, are you well?
It is nothing, said Gilliman, coming to his senses.
He looked towards the end of the cathedral where darkness held its secrets close.
I do not see anything, though the atmosphere suggests all is not well. Where is Mortarion's device?
The device is here. It will be at the high altar, said Tigurius, pointing to the uncertain gloom filling the cathedral's exedra. It hides itself from us in a cloak of bound shadow.
There is something there, said Maxim. I can feel it.
Gilliman looked down the cathedral's long aisle. A kilometre of polished marble floor heaped with broken roof tiles were between his party and the exedra housing the altar. His armoured fist flicked a quick signal to the Sisters of Silence in Battlemark, their simplified combat language. They bowed and moved quickly up the aisle. True to their name, they made no sound as they advanced, their armour silent and their feet noiseless on the wreckage of the church. Their silver plate vanished into the gloom, holding the far transept to ransom.
"Let them go ahead first," said Gilliman. "If there is illusion here, their unique gifts will tear it away."
They waited a while. The darkness did not lift until a pulsed vox click came into the Primarch's helm. The shadows remained thick, hiding their secrets, the sisters shrouded now also.
"They have found it," said Gilliman. "Come!"
Gilliman's progress up the aisle was far less stealthy than the sisters. The shattering of roof tiles under his feet echoed loudly around the ruined cathedral. 20 librarians of half a dozen chapters marched in solemn ranks behind him. They joined the sisters at the foot of the steps leading up to the altar. They were meters away, but they could not see it.
"It is here," gasped a librarian.
The hard emotional pressure of psychic power gathering strength pushed at the hind parts of the Primarch's brain as the librarians of the Adeptus Astartes prepared their gifts in response to the hate they felt lurking in the cathedral.
"Behold," sighed Sister Commander Bellas, "the weapon of the enemy."
She went up a single marble step away from Gilliman, closer to the altar. With a sound like the collective death sighs of a dozen old women, the cloak of darkness blurred and fell aside. Atop the steps, before the grand altar, was a monstrous device, almost as tall as the cathedral ceiling. A three-legged timepiece of brass and glass and fiendish intention. Throughout its elongated frame, hollow globes held bubbling liquids of no understandable purpose. Three columns of madly spinning clockwork rotated about an axis that, if carefully observed, was not rooted in the material realm. At the top, three clock faces ran backwards. Each one had its own pendulum, and they swung back and forth in a complicated dance outside of the turning columns, barely missing their neighbours at the apex of their travel. Their weights were crescent axe heads made of steel sharp as convent whispers. The air screamed faintly as they swung. Within the open framework of the clock, dark energies moved sinuously, wrapping themselves around crackling cylinders and clockwork that would have seemed commonplace in any other setting. At the very centre, enmeshed in moving gears and impure psychic power, was a triangular menhir, roughly 12 metres high, composed of a greenish mineral similar to olivine. It stood impossibly inverted, balanced on its point, the mass of it held up by no more than a centimetre's thickness of stone. It throbbed with the intensity of a migraine, a sluggish heartbeat of despair that sank into the soul. Set on red-rusted iron poles around the clock were three cast-bronze representations of Nurgle's tri-lobed sigil. They vibrated with inner power, a shimmering heat haze coming off them. Where the cathedral had seemed silent, now it resounded to a rapid triple ticking and the groaning of gears, as if the clock, once noticed, could not hide its corrupting voice and was revealed in totality.
"This is an abomination," signed Sister Commander Bellas. "The servants of Chaos always choose to insult our Holy Lord where they can."
Gilliman had made it a priority to re-establish the Sisters of Silence. He had gathered up the broken remnants of their order after arriving back on Terra. As the influence of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica had waxed and waned, their military arm had become less prominent over time. There had been comparatively many Sisters of Silence during the Great Crusade and the Heresy. Though numerous enough to play a role in the War of the Beast 1,000 years after the Heresy, by the 41st millennium they had dwindled toward extinction. Those remaining were occupied aboard the black ships, hunting psykers and performing the crucial role of damping the abilities of the cargo. The militant orders of the Emperor's day had been disbanded, diminished or lost to war. The last surviving few were scattered around the Imperium, most reduced to a handful of members. They fought on here and there, but their glory days were a myth at best. They were unremembered by the people they had died to protect. After thousands of years of obscurity, when Gilliman returned, the Sisters of Silence had come back willingly into the light, not because of who he was, but because of what he was. To them, he was a living saint. It had shocked Gilliman that the Sisters of Silence worshipped his father as so many other misguided souls did. Not for the first time, he thought of his brother, Lorgar. The clock loomed over the broken altar like a murderer over his victim. The great slab of exotic stone that had made the altar had been cloven in twain, and the walls behind it were deeply carved into with the three-ringed symbol of the plague god. Arcane sigils gleamed with reflected witchlight between them. A wooden statue of the Emperor holding out his arms in blessing hung over the altar still, but its head, feet, and hands had been hacked off, and the wood was charred all down one side. To the statue's right and left there were small alcoves, each containing representations of the loyal primarchs. For some reason, these effigies were untouched. Most looked nothing like their subjects. Gilliman's was laughably idealistic. With the sisters standing by Gilliman, he was protected from the greater part of the clock's power, but still the sense of evil emanating from it curdled his stomach and made his hands tingle with an urge to violence. It pushed at his mind, voiceless whispers telling him to tear off his armour and abase himself in the squalor of the city's ruin. Were it not for the sisters forming a circle around it, he would have found it difficult to approach. He pushed back with his own formidable will, refusing to be cowed.
"This is what my brother uses to defile the earth," he said, with cold anger. "He who was most vocal at Nykaia against the Librarium."
"It is the last on Espandor," signed the sister commander. "Such idols weaken the power of your father. Now we have struck down the one in Connor's Reach, and that in the city of Rhodosia. This is the sole remaining link to the Scourge Stars. Always the things of the plague god come in threes or sevens. If we destroy this, the malady that afflicts this world will be weakened. The demons will have little power left to remain."
"Mortarion is not here," said Gilliman.
"No, my lord," said Tigurius. "If he were, we would sense him." "Then it is time for me to be away from Espandor."
Gilliman had dearly wished to face his brother. The chances of meeting Mortarion upon Espandor had been slender, even though the demon primarch had expended a great deal of effort in investing the cardinal world. He reminded himself he could not be impatient. This was but the first step. He would find his brother, and he would kill him. Patience used to come easier to him.
"This machine will not succumb to demolition as the one on Ardium did," said Maxim. "There is a hateful presence here. We must cage it with our minds before the clock can be destroyed."
"Array your warriors, Tigurius," said Gilliman.
His hand grasped the hilt of his sword.
"I shall put an end to this, personally, with the Emperor's own blade."
"Guardians of the Emperor, to the Imperial Regent," ordered Colquhoun.
The Adeptus Custodes jogged from every part of the cathedral to form up around the Primarch. The circle of Sisters of Silence turned inwards, and they raised their executioner great blades. As Gilliman prepared himself to approach the cursed artifact, shouts came from the far end of the church. The door opened a crack.
"What is happening?"
the Primarch called. His powerful voice echoed clearly down the length of the cathedral.
"The Tetrarch says your priest is here, my lord," one of the Victrix Guard voxed. "He insists I let him enter."
"Allow him," said Gilliman.
He stepped away from the clock and released his sword handle.
"It is, after all, his church," he said to himself.
Militant Apostolic Matthew came into the cathedral with the same air of placid serenity he exhibited at all times, though he was caked in filth and a long cut marked his face under his left eye. Only when he drew closer did Gilliman notice the lines of anger on his face at the sight of the clock. Gilliman was surprised to see he wore no protective garb.
"You are not safe here, Militant Apostolic," the Primarch said. "Disease lingers, and the power of the warp is strong." "You are not afraid, my lord."
Matthew placed his hand on his heart and bowed his head. His plain, undecorated servo skull buzzed around his head in solemn orbit.
"Why should I be?"
Gilliman looked at him critically.
I am a Primarch, Matthew. You are not. We are both protected by the Emperor. My faith shields me. Like it protected these people here, said Gilliman.
He gestured at a heap of greening bones pinned under the fallen roof. Matthew smiled.
Your father cannot be everywhere, my lord, and the faith of some is stronger than others. For the moment, your father protects me.
Whether that is true or not, said Gilliman, I would prefer it if you wore an environment suit. See, the sisters and my space marines keep their helms sealed. Even Maldivar Colquhoun and his Adeptus Custodes would not risk being in here without the correct filtration equipment. They are among the closest of all men to the Emperor, and made with great art. If they are cautious, so should you be.
Very few men would ignore a suggestion like that from the Primarch, but Freitor Matthew shook his head.
I will be well. I have been fighting all day, and I am untouched. I am protected.
He walked around the exedra. He drew dangerously close to the cursed clock. He made the sign of the Aquila, but showed no sign of being affected by the malevolence radiating palpably from it. Gilliman scrutinized the priest carefully, waiting for signs of madness or disease. When Matthew did not speak for some time, Gilliman's hand shifted within the hand of dominion. He was close to sending the mental command via his battleplate's nerve shunts that would bring it sparking into life. He relaxed when Matthew knelt in the filth of the floor and bowed his head. There he prayed silently. The Sisters of Silence dipped their helms as if in communion with him. Gilliman shared a glance with Colquhoun. The custodian gave a small shrug that sent his ornate armor into a ripple of gold. His prayer done, Matthew stood and genuflected towards the ruined wooden effigy of his god, then turned to the Emperor's last loyal son.
Where do they find such hate? He asked. What could make them want to become like this? They have made themselves monsters.
The question brought a hard expression to Gilliman's face.
Hatred is in the hearts of all men, the Primarch said. It is in my heart. I hate the Death Guard for abandoning reason and for what they have become. I hate my brothers for their betrayal, but I do not blame them. Most hate springs from fear or shame or despair. The traitors despair, I am sure. They must feel shame at what they have destroyed, and so they become more extreme in their hatred.
You speak mercifully of the heretics, said Matthew, softly.
They shall find no mercy from me. They are what they are. But we must not forget that most of them were noble warriors, and were led down this path by others. Words from a beloved leader can twist a man's heart. It was, I believe, the Emperor's fault, if he had not lied.
Gilliman's voice trailed away. He frowned. He questioned himself if that were really true. Maybe nothing could have stopped what had happened. Then he remembered the throne room and the light and that vast inhuman soul touching his.
Did he really lie? Asked Matthew into the silence.
He was barely breathing, caught up in revelation of his god's words.
Yes. Yes, he did. He knew the true nature of the warp, but kept it to himself. I deduce he wanted to keep my brothers and I from temptation, but instead ignorance left us vulnerable to it. Horus was a good man before he turned. He was proud and arrogant, that is for sure. But he believed in our father's dream of the Imperium, and the love between them was so strong.
Gilliman looked at Matthew solemnly. He had once believed that. He truly had. Now he lied, just like his father had.
Chaos found a way to use Horus's love and pervert it. My father made a miscalculation, and it cost us all dearly.
Matthew let out the breath he was holding.
I marvel that you walked alongside the Holy Emperor himself, my lord. It is glorious to hear you speak of him.
I did,
said Gilliman sadly. I wish it could be so again.
He had his own reasons for desiring that. He kept them to himself.
Matthew searched for the right thing to say. Gods are not beholden to the same laws as mortal men are, my lord. His reasons for lying are beyond our ken, even yours.
Gilliman pulled a face at Matthew.
Matthew, you will not convince me that he is a god. He told me this himself many times. I spoke with him like I speak with you now. The Emperor is remarkable, the pinnacle of humanity's evolutionary path, and he has power that you and I cannot comprehend. But he was not and is not a god. He was a man, an exceptional man, but a man nonetheless. As a man, he made mistakes. As a man, he had his flaws.
You are his son, my lord, said Matthew. You have said that you are not a man.
I am not a normal man, said the Primarch, but I am still human for all the many gifts the Emperor gave me, and so is the Emperor.
Matthew paced around the darkness of the Excedra, his sandals splashing in the shallow puddles on the marble as he looked up at the lofty clock.
If your father has the power of a god, does that not make him one, whether he believed himself to be so or not? He said. The Emperor protects us. It is evident in the actions of his holy saints, who are the will of the Emperor made manifest, and the Legion of the Damned, who appear at Battle's Forlorn Hope, and in the Emperor's Tarot, whose readings guide ordinary men day to day.
Gilliman thought back again to his meeting with his father. He did not like to revisit the memory. It was as if the memory forced itself on him, rather than he actively sought to recall it. The thing in the cradle of the ancient machines, fed by loathsome technology. And then the golden light. And then the pain. Gilliman's lips pressed thin. The display had been a form of control. The pain had been a form of control. He was tired of being used.
He is not a god, he said.
He is to me. He is to trillions. Why will you not accept the truth?
To me, he was a father. A distant, uncaring, heartless, manipulative father, he thought. And a lord. I have died for him once and would again. That does not give him divinity.
Coldness. That was the defining sensation of his meeting with the Emperor. Infinite, terrible coldness. He had approached the meeting with dread, fearing what he would find. Would his father be dead? Would he be insane? Would they even be able to talk? When he had been admitted to the throne room and approached the golden throne, he had done so as he had approached his foster father Connor's funeral, willing it all to be right, drowning in certain grief. Between the time of the Emperor's ascension to the throne and Gilliman's own death, the Emperor had spoken to no one. How could anything have persisted for 10,000 years, he had thought. There was the wizened corpse, surrounded by banks of groaning machinery, his sword upon his knee. Sorrow suffused everything. The sacrifice required to keep the Emperor alive sickened the Primarch. If he were alive, he appeared dead. Gilliman had expected nothing. But he spoke. With words of light and fire, the Emperor had conferred with his returned Primarch, the last of his finest creations. A creation, not a son. The living Emperor had been an artful being, as skilled at hiding his thoughts as he was at reading those of others. What remained of him was powerful beyond comprehension, but it lacked the subtlety he had had whilst he walked among men. Speaking with the Emperor had been like conversing with a star. The Emperor's words burned him. What hurt most deeply was what went unsaid. The Emperor greeted Gilliman not as a father receives a son, but as a craftsman who rediscovers a favourite tool that he thought lost.
He behaved like a prisoner locked in an iron cage who is past a rasp. Gilliman had no illusions. He was not the man who brought the rasp. He was the rasp. While the Emperor had walked abroad, he had cloaked his manipulations in love. He had let his primarchs call him father. He had let them call themselves his sons. He had rarely spoken those words himself, Gilliman now realized, and when he had done so without sincerity. Buffeted by the full might of the Emperor's will, unclothed in flesh, a cloak had been ripped from Gilliman's eyes. The Emperor had allowed them to love him and to believe he loved them in return. He had not. His primarchs were weapons, that was all. Though his power was immense, perhaps greater than it had been before he ascended, the Emperor's humanity was all but gone. He could no longer mask his thoughts with a human face. The Emperor's light was blinding, all-encompassing, but finally, finally, Gilliman had seen it as a whole. The being he had thought of as a father could hide nothing from him. The Emperor did not love his sons. They were things. Gilliman, all his brothers, were nothing but a means to an end. Matthew smiled. My lord, he is father to us all now. Did your father not speak with you of his divinity when you received your revelation? The Primarch's scowl was calculated to reveal enough of his anger to shut the priest up and no more.
My other militant apostolics learned very quickly not to ask me what occurred in the throne room when I returned to Terra, said Gilliman warningly. Take this as your lesson. Now, enough of this theological debate. It is time to remove some of the enemy's advantage upon Espandor.
Gilliman smoothly drew his father's sword. Matthew gasped. He had seen the sword of the Emperor drawn on several occasions. Every time he bore witness to a miracle. On leaving the scabbard, the blade burst into flame. Gilliman did not begrudge the priest his awe. There was great warpcraft in the weapon.
When the blade was removed from the Emperor's withered knee and presented to Gilliman by the Captain General of the Adeptus Custodes, it had somehow fit his Primarch's stature. Gilliman frowned. He tried to remember how tall the Emperor was, but his living image refused to be caught and examined. In some memories, he was as tall as Gilliman. In others, no bigger than a mortal man.
I can feel his presence, said Matthew. With wide eyes, he stared into the flickering shadows made by the fire, as if he could see the Emperor looking back at him. He is all around us, right now. I can feel his power. Gilliman looked at the blade's flickering edge. When he held it, he too felt the Emperor close by. There had been places in the past that retained an echo of the Emperor's power long after he had visited. This sword had been his father's own, the blade that had slain Horus and ended the strife of the heresy, or so all had thought at the time. He hefted the weapon thoughtfully. The firelight danced in his eyes. How it burned was a question of the warp, not of science, for all the machine trappings on the blade and in the hilt. His father had been gifted in both, more so than any other man. The sword resisted Gilliman's attempts to learn its nature, and he would not release it to any other agency for study. For these arts, Magnus had been censured. The retaliation for a warning sent in good faith had created another terrible foe. Another miscalculation on his father's part. Only a human could make so many errors.
He is not a god.
Counter to that, no man excelled in so much.
If a man has all the powers of a god, is he not a god?
Gilliman asked himself.
That is what Matthew believes.
Theoretical.
There is the possibility he is correct. I am not immune to mistake.
He raised the sword aloft. Its warm yellow firelight beat the shadows back. The scent of incense filtered into the room. The librarians held up their hands and muttered focusing prayers, the light of their power shining from their eyes and gathering in their hands. The sisters took a step closer to the clock, suppressing its malevolent power.
You are not welcome, Gilliman said, and he did not know if he was saying it to the stone or to his father's faint ghost that seemed to haunt the room. Be gone to the warp. With those simple words, he swung. Whatever its nature, the sword of the Emperor was anathema to chaos. It split one leg of the clock as easily as if it had been butter. The machine lurched, its ticking falling out of time and its pendulums clashing together. Clockwork ground upon the unholy stone in the centre of the device as it took the weight of the unbalanced mechanism. Sparks sprayed from the rock, but the device did not fall, only pulsed faster and glowed brighter. Gilliman strode to the second of the three legs, drew back his weapon, and struck again. The second leg was cut neatly through. The clock lurched again, all its weight pressed sideways onto the obelisk. It held for a moment, then, with the screaming of metal upon stone, the clock collapsed, taking the menhir down with it. The great stone cracked, and its light dimmed. The clock groaned as gears clashed. The mechanism locked, and it was still. The Primarch gestured to the broken device. Remove this, he ordered the Sisters of Silence. Make sure all the pieces are gathered. They moved forwards. A fusion lance was brought up, and las cutters, and they began to dismember the remains. Gilliman watched them begin work, then turned his back. Matthew looked at him in adoration. I advise you to leave, Militant Apostolic, said the Primarch. This place is not safe for you. You have been here long enough. Matthew's face changed from rapture. He frowned. My lord, I... He blinked and pointed. Lord Regent, gasped Tigurius. Something is coming! Gilliman looked back at the clock in time to see the first sister die. A stabbing blade shot from the working she was cutting into, running her through and lifting her 3 meters into the air on a pillar of brass that moved and coiled organically, reforming itself into something deadly. Demon! Screamed Maxim. A pulse of energy boomed out from the wrecked clock, and a foul wind blew in all directions. The carving of the Emperor on the wall rattled and banged against the vandalized stonework, came loose from its fittings, and crashed down to the floor. The librarians roared with effort, their aegis hoods blazing with psi amplification. We cannot hold it closed! A rift is forming! One shouted. He fell back, staggering, whips of psychic feedback cracking out and lashing the cathedral pillars. The custodes bowed into the wind, their boots scraping on the floor as they were forced backwards by the unnatural gale. Gilliman planted the sword of the Emperor in the ground and knelt behind it. Flames streamed from its edges around him, forming a golden shield. A crack of thunder presaged the opening of a tear in real space, and a heaving, gelatinous presence poured through, splashing into the broken clock. Long streams of it wrapped themselves around the workings, its touch turning them green and dull with decay, even as it bound them together, remaking them and pulling them into a tall, detestable shape. A black, oily skin formed over the clockwork and broken stone. The demon rose up, gathering the staff of the clock and the menhir into itself and taking on humanoid form. Organs of whirring cogs sank into its chest. Ropey muscle moved under the shining black skin. Where the metal and stone showed in its form, they were corroded, brass and bronze becoming green fused lumps, and the rock pitting, though it glowed brighter and brighter. Forearms grew and grew, the fingers becoming long, backward-facing spikes, like the wings of a bat. A short, powerful rear pair of legs burst from the back of the mass. Huge shoulders grew in seconds, unnatural bones cracking as they grew at pace. With a lurching flop, the clock demon lurched forwards. For a head, it had the eyeless skull of an equid left long in the forest, green and grey, the honeycomb of its dead marrow showing where the outer layer had failed. It walked, hunched over on the knuckles of its elongated fingers, though it had no wing membranes to join them. Indeed, it appeared half-finished overall. As it moved, its oily surface dulled, becoming leathery, rotting skin. A choking miasma of decay filled the cathedral. The wind died. Back, demon!
Shouted Gilliman. He raised his sword.
I am Quaramar of the Lost Second,
said a rasping, hideous voice that came from nowhere and everywhere.
Last Watcher of the Last Moment, fifth in Nurgle's favor. I cannot be killed. I have seen the end of time. I will be there when the final atomic motion of this hateful realm decays into blessed entropy, and chaos will be born anew. I am sent here to be your executioner, anathema's get.
It's a trap!
Yelled Tigorius. He raised his hand and blazed out a fork of warp lightning.
Take it down! Yelled Colquhoun.
All at once, the Primarch's party attacked. Bolts hammered into the demon's unnatural body. Psychic power washed at it. The demon marched forwards, its spirit still knitting matter into its false body. The temperature plummeted as it sucked the energy from reality around it. Bullets disappeared like pebbles dropping into water, sending out ripples in the air, and nothing more. The thing tossed its head, a stinking mane that looked like rags of seaweed flicked out around its bare skull, and the lightning and fire of the librarians was turned aside, blasting into the cathedral. It stomped forwards, growing larger as it moved. Now its skin was full of holes and ribs gleamed beneath. A moment later, it was smooth and supple, untouched by time. As it stalked forwards like a dragon from ancient legend, it aged and died over and over, though its mismatched skull remained the same throughout, and the stink remained, whether its state was flush with youth or ripe with rot. Quaramar snickered.
You cannot harm me. I am the end of time. I am the last moment of decay.
It bent its long head low to the ground and drew in a breath that sucked the warriors of the Imperium towards its razor-toothed maw. Then it blew out, so hard they were bowled over, and Aegis hoods exploded around the heads of a few of the lesser librarians. They died, consumed by their own power, their souls burning up as hot white stab fires blazed from their eye sockets. Mucus blasted from Quaramar's mouth, a mist filled with gobbets of diseased offal, maggots, and all manner of foulness. Where it hit armor, metal rotted, and where it melted its way through to flesh, warriors fell. Where it hit stone, it slid and gathered, taking on the shapes of diseased, pot-bellied mortals. All around the cathedral, plague-bearers rose up, already counting their infernal count before they had fully manifested. Quaramar rose onto its muscular hind limbs and spread its membraneless wings wide.
Fear me, for I am the Rot Drake, the Foul Catcher, the Master of Last Moments. I am the Death of Time,
it said.
And I am mighty.
Quaramar attacked. The cathedral became a battlefield where men and women struggled to survive. The fog given off by the demon corroded breathing apparatus, poured down throats, and attacked lungs. The enhanced warriors of the Adeptus Astartes and the Adeptus Custodes struggled on, their mighty bodies fighting against the poison. But even their multi-lungs were no guarantee of survival. Several of the Victrix Guard, the cream of Ultramar, fell to Quaramar's pestilence. The Sisters of Silence attacked it, blades swinging. Their soulless auras perturbed the existence of the demon, but it swatted them back, or snapped them up in its massive horse's maw, shearing them in two between scissor teeth. The custodians charged in, swinging their guardian spears, but they were swept aside by a swipe of the creature's wing limbs, and one of their mighty company died before Gilliman ordered them to disengage.
Enough! This beast is beyond you! Fall back, I command you! I will fight it!
His sword flaring with fire, Gilliman stepped closer. Quaramar swung its heavy head around to face the Primarch.
You will die. Your bodyguard will die. All things die before Quaramar, the last, the lifeless, the never living.
It bounded forwards. The bones of its useless wings clacked against one another. It knocked the Adeptus Custodes aside, crushing one underneath a massive hindclaw. The power of the enemy was immense. Its very presence scrabbled at Gilliman's soul, threatening to shred the edges and tear pieces away. It roared out a torrent of filth at the Primarch. He raised his sword, and its bile evaporated on the blade's fires.
I have slain many like you, said Gilliman.
There are none like me, said Quaramar. There are none like me, either.
Quaramar swung its finger bones like swords, slashing down hard at the Primarch. Gilliman parried one hand, dodging the other. The sword of the Emperor blazed white hot as it connected with the demon's skin. But though the sword's touch alone was death to most demons, it was not enough to harm the last watcher. Gilliman was forced back by the dragon thing's onslaught. Custodians leapt to his side, their weapons swinging in perfect synchronicity with one another. They cut it many times, but the wounds closed as Quaramar aged and grew young in constant cycle, and the custodians were always swept away by vicious sweeps of the thing's wings, leaving Gilliman to battle it alone. As Quaramar fought, the wing fingers trailed shadow that coalesced into ragged skin. A livid growth of flesh crept up from the base of its equid skull, cladding it in raw, pulsing muscle.
With every death, I grow stronger, it said. With every soul, I grow greater. At the end of time, I hold all the dead in me, and so none are mightier than I. This is not the end of time, said Gilliman, and he struck.
The sword of the Emperor swung true, flames rushing from its edge like a banner. Quaramar whipped back its materializing wing too slowly. With crackle of power, the sword cleaved off the tip of Quaramar's littlest elongated finger. Quaramar screeched so loudly, part of the cathedral wall tumbled down, crushing space marines and demons alike. The severed digit tip skidded up against a pillar and boiled away to nothing. Beneath his helmet, Gilliman smiled with savage triumph.
This is the sword of the Emperor, the great foe of chaos. It has laid low thousands of your kind. You shall be but an addition to the tally.
Roaring horribly, Quaramar struck down. Gilliman parried one-handed. Though shaken by the impact, he recovered quickly, raising the Hand of Dominion and raking the side of the creature with bolt fire. Rotten skin blew out in showers of gore, and when Quaramar cycled back to his youthful state, the wounds remained.
Impossible!
It hissed.
I am the light of the Imperium, the Imperial Regent. I was made by the Emperor, and he watches over me now. I shall be your downfall, demon, not you mine.
Gilliman swung his sword round overhead, the fires roaring into a perfect circle. He struck again, cutting deep into the forearm of the demon. Blood and broken clockwork rained down from the injury, and Quaramar roared in anger.
To the Primarch! Let us aid him!
Shouted Colquhoun, dragging himself off the floor, snatching up his dropped spear and eviscerating a plague-bearer with a point-blank shot from the built-in bolt gun.
I cannot be killed! I am death!
Cried the demon.
There are many that claim that name, said Gilliman. I have killed them all!
Gilliman pressed his attack, battering at the demon with a series of lightning blows that filled the space around him with sheets of fire. He carved away the tips of three more wing fingers, and when the creature recoiled, he sliced deep into its right shoulder. It screamed loud enough to interrupt the endless counting of the lesser demons. With a bellow almost as terrifying as the demon's, Gilliman hit its shoulder again, shearing off the whole of its right wing. The limb thrashed about on the floor as it dissipated back into the warp, and the demon backed away. It attempted its scream again, but a slam of psychic force from the Space Marine librarians stole its voice and sent it whimpering backwards.
"I cannot be killed," it repeated. "I am death!"
Brass gears and diseased organs ran from its rotten innards onto the floor.
"Then be gone!"
shouted Tigurius. Together, he and the other psychic space marines bent their will, tearing open the rift the demon had poured itself through. Purplish light spilled across the ruined cathedral. Rotting faces gathered there, eager to join their demonic lord. But the power of the space marines held them back, preventing their ingress, and they howled with outrage. Quaramar skittered back, lurching towards the rift. Bolt rounds hammered into its side. Sisters and custodians ran at it and drove their weapons into its flesh, all while Gilliman struck and struck again. The demon was forced to defend itself, no longer able to attack, its remaining wing battered aside by the sword of the Emperor with every swipe. Then it stopped, and it laughed.
"You cannot kill me!"
it roared, and it reared up. A pulse of power upended the attacking warriors, sending them clattering down the steps of the altar. Dark light flared around it, and its body knitted its wounds, growing its wing anew. It beat both wings, now whole and webbed with patterned flesh. Gusts of poisonous air wafted back, and the demon rose up over the battling host. Spitting balls of searing matter, it attacked again.
"Lord Gilliman!" yelled Maxim. "Force it back! Send it into the warp!"
Gilliman watched Quaramar swoop down the cathedral aisle, its wings almost brushing the sides. Its long head, now raw and bloody, its sockets filled with rolling yellow eyes, snapped at the warriors of mankind. The doors opened, and Tetrarch Felix came in, his Primaris Space Marines battering at the demon with a torrent of plasma and bolt fire. But the demon laughed and dove at them, scattering them and slaying three.
"I will end it," said the Primarch.
He cast about himself. He spied a set of crumbling stairs within the cathedral that ended in a broken gallery. They shook as he ran to the top, stone pattering on the ground. He halted at the edge of the missing floor. The demon folded its wings, spun around and turned, nose over tail. It passed down the aisle again, back towards the site of the broken clock and the Primarch.
"You shall perish, little Emperor," said Quaramar, "and the Imperium with you."
"I think not," said Gilliman.
Rabute Gilliman waited for Quaramar to come screaming at him. Then he leapt. He cleared 6 meters from a standing start, arms and legs wheeling as he fell towards the demon's back. Quaramar turned its flayed skull around to snap at the Imperial Regent. Only at the last second did Gilliman grasp the sword of the Emperor in both hands and drive it down through the beast's back, piercing its mechanical heart. Quaramar screamed, its wings thrashing. Gilliman leaned back on his sword, making the demon rear up higher in the air. Power built in the sword, and it glowed incandescently until light burned in every rent and orifice of the demon's body.
"Now, my lord, leap!" shouted Tigurius.
Gilliman kicked back off the demon, jumping sideways as it crashed, body aflame all over, through the tear in space and time.
"Close the rift!" ordered Tigurius.
A shockwave boomed through the cathedral, blasting out its remaining windows and bringing down another portion of its weakened walls. The remaining lesser warpborn wavered like mirages and disappeared, their droning count fading moments later. The shouts of men replaced the sounds of the battle as the wounded were given succor, and more warriors came rushing into the cathedral.
"It is done," said the Primarch. "Espandor is free of Mortarion's witchcraft. Its cleansing may begin."
Gilliman put up and sheathed the sword. The fires went out, plunging the cathedral back into darkness, but a certain sanctity remained. By the Emperor's own blade, Gilliman had driven back the baleful influence of chaos. He could not deny the effect. He could not have defeated an enemy like that without the weapon.
Godlike, he thought.
Matthew sank to his knees.
Praise be,
he whispered. Tears ran down his face.
You are still alive, said Gilliman, with mild surprise.
The Emperor protects. The Emperor protects, Matthew said, part way into a religious fugue. As you fought and others died, I was unharmed. Praise be! Praise be! The Emperor has touched this place.
Gilliman shrugged. Combat over, he was weary. The emptiness inside him seemed deeper for his encounter with the demon. His heart labored and his scar itched.
He remains potent, even now.
I can feel his love for humanity, said Matthew. I can feel it, all around me.
He hesitated in his rapture.
Tell me, O Lord Regent, truthfully, does the Emperor love us, my lord? Do not say I am wrong.
The Emperor loves no one man, thought Gilliman. He cannot afford affection. That is the honest practical for the impossible task that faces the master of mankind. He did not love his sons. He does not love men. But he does love mankind. I find it hard to forgive him. Did his solution have to be built on lies? Lies upon lies.
Matthew's question pushed Gilliman deeper into melancholy. More than anything, he yearned to speak with his foster father, Conor, one more time. He had been a noble soul, one who could be trusted, a true father.
Had you not died before the Emperor arrived in Ultramar, would I have abandoned you as quickly as my brothers abandoned their adoptive families? He asked himself.
He knew the answer to that, and it shamed him. No one is immune to the effects of such power, he told himself, but that did not make the truth any more palatable. He understood. He knew what his father wanted to achieve, and why. Facing things like Quaramar brought it home to him time and again. Knowing what opposed mankind made him see the utility of lies. Could Gilliman honestly say he loved all the men who called themselves his sons? He barely knew them, especially now, calls blasphemous hordes in particular. They too were a means to an end. He and his father had that in common. The mantle of rulership was weighty and moulded the man that bore it.
I never wanted to be a tyrant, thought the Primarch. Perhaps my father did not wish to be so either. History has roles for us that cannot be denied. We are but pieces on the board of eternity.
My lord, said Matthew into the Primarch's silence, please tell me, does the Emperor love us?
We are so much more like you than you ever intended, thought Gilliman. You gave too much of yourself to us. Without realizing, in your arrogance, you made yourself a father in truth. We are your sons in every way. Did you see that?
My lord, said Matthew.
The Emperor loves us all,
lied Rabute Gilliman. He looked over the broken statue and the few remains of the clock.
Now, leave me be, Matthew. I must consult with the Tribune and the Tetrarch.
Gilliman left Matthew kneeling in the dust and went to the gates of the cathedral where Tribune Colquan, Tetrarch Felix and the rest gathered. Upon the steps outside, he unlocked his helmet, revealing his face to Espandoria Tertio's muggy day. He breathed air free of taint other than that of honest decay. The plague god's influence had receded. He closed his eyes and let the sun dry the sweat on his skin.
It is done, said Gilliman. We leave Espandor tonight. What are our plans, my lord? Asked Colquhoun. The Genesis chapter, the Aurora chapter, the Knights Cerulean, the Mortifactors, and sundry other elements are to remain here to purge the demonic infestation in the far west and slay the remainder of the Death Guard. The rest of our army will withdraw and redeploy. Mortarion is not here. His web of evil is disrupted. The forces left are a delaying tactic, nothing more. There is no more reason for me to remain.
Where do you think he might be? Asked Colquhoun neutrally.
Parmenio, said Gilliman, without pause.
All his careful winnowing of data had suggested either Espandor or Parmenio as Mortarion's base of operations. If Mortarion was not on Espandor, he would be on the other.
He is on Parmenio.
You are sure? Asked Felix.
I am sure. It is hard to reckon our actions here a victory, but we have taken the first steps to assuring we will win. Let Mortarion feel at ease and think I cannot find him, nor dislodge him from Ultramar. He is about to be disabused of this misapprehension.
Gilliman smiled grimly.
On Parmenio, I will make him see the truth.
With those words, the Primarch passed from the cathedral and into the ruins of Espandoria Tertio alone, his soul laden with sorrow. That was Dark Imperium by Guy Haley, read by John Banks. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2018.